All right, welcome to the Free Stretch Week 2 edition here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, and we are, in fact, talking about a 1-0 football team, as we hoped we would be last week when we got ready for the matchup that happened this past weekend as the Commanders came to town and the Bucks end up giving them a 37-20 drubbing. Move to 1-0 on the season, a good spot to be when you're about to head on the road for your first game away from home of the year, and it's against a pretty good opponent, the Detroit Lions. So the Bucks did what they had to do on Sunday. We'll see if they can do it again this Sunday. If they're going to do it, they're going to do it facing a lot of injury issues. We're going to talk about all of it today on the show, but thank you for joining us, as is a real, real nice opener for the Bucks. And that was, it was fun to watch Buccaneer football, I'll tell you that much, with a few caveats, which we'll get into today. So thanks to the Joes at Joe Bucks Fan for hosting the show here and letting me have this platform. Thanks to you for listening. It was a good, first of all, let's talk about Sunday, because the show last week, we were talking about that feeling you get at Sunday, on Sunday at 1 p.m. when everything starts rolling in, whether it's your favorite team having a game right there at kickoff, or your fantasy lineup being set, or a picks league. I'm in a picks league with all my friends, where we pick against the spread all 272 regular season games, survivor pools, you know, all the different things people do, in addition to just enjoying watching football. If you have Red Zone, which I don't, but if you have Red Zone, the 7 hours of commercial-free football, all that stuff. It was really, really good to have Sunday at 1 p.m. back in my life. Like, it's just a nice, like, I wake up Sunday morning, I play in my weekly Ultimate Frisbee game with my buddies at 9 a.m. every Sunday for 20 years. But during the fall, I come home, jump in the pool. You know, I'm always, I mean, it's incredibly hot this time of year. We're playing for 2 hours out there. I'm ready to drop dead. Jump in the pool, cool off, come back inside. It's just about time to get my bets in, make sure my picks are good, and off we went. And it was a good Sunday. It was a lot of good action. If you're just a regular cable watcher in the Tampa Bay area, yeah, I know the early slot we were getting the Steelers-Falcons game. Good to see the Steelers beat the Falcons, by the way. Always want to see a division team lose, especially to a team from the other conference entirely. Saints were all over the Panthers in the other conference game. But the other game on CBS was Dolphins-Jags. And I was going back and forth between those. It was fun. You know, I can get by without Red Zone doing that. And then the Buck game had center stage at 425. And what a debut it was, I'll tell you what. It wasn't perfect, and you don't expect perfection, but that's about as good as you could have hoped for, especially from the offense. Liam Cohen's new offense, and it's only one game. We're going to say this over and over and over, even through the first few games, let alone one game. But Liam Cohen's new offense, sample size, only one game, all that stuff. Really liked what I saw, liked the concepts in particular. I mean, I remember that touchdown, that the game was already in hand, but the touchdown to McMillan at the end where they attacked the Commanders' coverage in a way that just left the guys didn't know who to cover, and it was just great play design. McMillan was wide open, and I know he had had a couple opportunities early in the game, and we either missed him on targets, or there was one that I thought he should have caught early on the, I think it was the first drive. But anyway, that type of play design and playing to Mayfield's strengths, which are, you know, he's got a good arm, he's better throwing down the strips, down to the sidelines, out toward the tips than he is throwing over the middle, and just to see, I mean, that play ran itself with the way it was designed. McMillan came wide open, and there were a few others like that. The touchdown to Mike Evans, and, you know, that was the first time. It's kind of funny because I try not to be on my phone too much, but during the game, I'm usually sitting watching the game, and I've got my phone. I'm on Twitter, so I'm, like, looking up at each play. Then I'm scrolling through Twitter, seeing what people are saying, that type of thing. And it's funny because that was nothing new. I mean, Mike Evans has done stuff like that before, but it felt like Twitter, and I'm not just talking about my, I follow people that are Bucks people, you know, they're going to do talk about the Bucks no matter what. But I saw so many national people checking in after that play saying, oh my God, Mike Evans, this guy, unbelievable, he's one of the best of all. And I was like, yeah, you know, we've been saying this for a while, and that catch he made, I mean, first of all, again, it was great play design. If you look at it, they lined up four wide to the near side, the right side, just left Evans alone over there. The safeties had to respect all the different receivers that were on the one side, and it gave Evans a chance to go up against one guy who covered him well. And that's the thing about Mike Evans, is that you can do literally the best that you can possibly do, and it's still not enough because that one-on-one matchup is just an automatic advantage for anybody for the Bucks, no matter who the person is on the other side of the one-on-one. And so the coverage was really good. He was actually kind of draped, but it didn't matter. Mayfield made a really good throw, and Evans went up and won the football. And, yeah, people were popping off all over. Oh, my God, Mike Evans, you got to see this play. I mean, man, he does that all the time. We've kind of taken it for granted. I don't think we do now, but – and this, let me make this my annual because I do this once a year. I'll do it right now. I always want to be accountable on this show, and I always want to point out where I was mistaken. When I'm wrong about something, I'll admit it. When I'm right about something, I'll point it out. I'm not going to gloat because I know there's just as many, if not more, times I'm going to be wrong. So once a year, I go back and say this, usually after Mike Evans does something incredible. I remember when we drafted him. I remember the disappointment. I was like, a receiver, you know, whatever. You know, I was kind of lukewarm. I think this is when the Lions, if I remember correctly, the Lions already had Calvin Johnson. I was like, even if he's really good, it's not going to matter. Like, what's it? You can't, we need something. What I wanted, and this is the worst part of it, what I wanted that year was another Texas A&M player. I wanted Johnny Manziel. Admittedly, one of the worst things I've ever wanted, I wanted Johnny Manziel. I thought that guy was the guy. I was like, this guy's going to come into the league. This guy's got it, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so we did take a player from Texas A&M. It was Mike Evans. And it wasn't anything against Evans. Like, I didn't think he was good. I just was disappointed because I wanted somebody else, and I just didn't want a player at that position, and on and on and on. And I was like, yeah, okay, Mike Evans. That's not the Texas A&M guy I wanted, but whatever. That's what I said. I'm only doing this once a year, so next year I'll do my mea culpa again, but I'm not going to get into it every time Mike Evans does something else the rest of the season. But really cool to see that. And really cool to see, one, that he still looks good. Two, Chris Godwin. I told you this. This is where I was right. Well, it's still early, but I'm thinking this is going to prove to be right. Okay? He was hurt, missed all that time. Then he came back. But just because you're back, that we kind of think of it as a binary thing. He's either out or he's playing, which means he's himself. And it takes time to come back from that type of injury that Godwin had. And even when he was playing last year, he wasn't himself. I think now, another full offseason, he's playing in the slot. He's so good in the slot, and they're able to use him where he belongs. And what we saw from Chris Godwin was a great, great, hopefully sneak preview of what we're going to see all year. But he really looked good. In fact, say what you want about Pro Football Focus, but he was the PFF number one grade out of 100 wide receivers in week one. Chris Godwin was number one. Mayfield, for his part, was the fourth highest quarterback. And then on defense, not to go off on PFF grades, but on defense, no one on D was better than 20th. Anyway, point is Chris Godwin looked really good. He's a weapon again. There's a difference between being out there, just being out there on the field, and being a weapon. He wasn't a weapon last year like he had been in the past. It feels like he's a weapon again, I hope. And again, it's a sample size thing. And Mike Evans, same thing. McMillan, I thought he could have broken through a little earlier, but it was good to see him break through. I think they've got a really good receiver trio. I mean, try and rank them, say, oh, we got the best. The Bucks have a very, very, very solid top three at receiver. That would be the envy of most of, if not all, the league. Let's put it that way, okay? So that's whatever issues they're going to end up having this year, and I'm still a little concerned. It's only one game, but whatever issues they're going to have, I don't think, barring injuries, it'll be at receiver. And I thought Baker Mayfield looked really good. I think seeing him and Liam Coen together, working together the way they can, and Coen bringing out the best of what his strengths are, I think is going to be really good for the Bucs. Running game, I know everybody's raving about the running game, and it was good. And Rashad White and Bucky Irving look like a really good 1-2 punch right now. I thought there was still something to be desired in run blocking. There were a few too many negative plays and some breakdowns and stuff. And you've got a rookie starting at center. Although Barton did well. I mean, bless Barton's heart, he did really well. I'm not singling him out. But, yeah, I think that's only going to get better. And that was good to see quite a bit. I loved the one when we hit the big gain on the screen pass and they threw the illegal man downfield flag. Has anybody ever seen that before? Like where they changed the call like that? Is that new? Did I miss something? I know they talked about trying to get the Sky ref involved more, but I've talked about it in the past. That is exactly how we should want NFL officiating to work, okay? I've said this so many times and it felt so good. Because it wasn't like a challenge. It wasn't something where this stupid little, oh, I got to throw a flag and I have to make a strategic decision. It was, no, here's a play. They should review, I mean, they literally should review every play, especially if there's a penalty. I'm not saying go back and review plays where there weren't penalties and try and find penalties, but anytime there's a score, a turnover, or a flag on any play, they should be watching. When I say they, I mean the couch ref, as I call it. Somebody watching that can just look at that exact thing and say, oh, well, hey, actually, this wasn't what they thought it was. Radio down, boom. And it was weird because I was watching the game. They threw the flag, called back a big game for the Bucks. Everybody's like, oh, man, that sucks. You know? And I see all the players all of a sudden, like all the Bucks players are like gesturing like the first down signal. And I'm like, what are they doing? There's no challenge. What's going on here? And it turns out the league office or wherever their nerve center is, or is it the nerve center or is it in the stadium? I'm not sure. I'm going to do more research on that. But the eye in the sky, watch the play over again, say, oh, no, he wasn't more than a yard past the line of scrimmage. Radio's down. Hey, that one's good. The process was seamless. You know how there was no delay in the game? It took, like, I think, an extra few seconds. And that was it. And they got the call right. And I was like, oh, my God, this is exactly what it should look like. Like, not this challenge thing where you have to decide if it's worth the risk and should we gamble and then we lose timeout. Like, coaches should be doing nothing involving that. They should be coaching the game. The officials on the field do their thing, then they have a safety net behind them of people who have the benefit of watching replay in real time. Because you know how when you're at home and you see these replays and you can tell within 10 seconds if a call was good or not. So if we can do that just in our living room, just on the regular little replay the TV broadcast provides you, why can't we have an assigned group of like a second layer of officiating that can just real quick take a quick look? Oh, that ball hit the ground. Oh, that toe was here. Oh, that guy wasn't a yard downfield. And they did it. It was beautiful. So I hope we see more of that this year where calls get right. There's no unnecessary delays. There's, again, it's just a second layer. It's just a nice, basically, safety net for the guys on the field who have a really hard job. They can't see everything, and especially at the speed it happens in real time. Why not have another set of eyes with the benefit of technology behind them? And it's not about going over anybody's head or anything. It's just about simply everybody working together to get the most accurately officiated and called game that you can. And I was really happy they did that. But anyway, that's an aside. Back to the running game and the offensive line. Pretty good from the offense altogether. Now, it has to be said, okay, and I say this all the time to my son. Well, I don't say it to him. I never want to get their confidence. My son and his like travel baseball team or the basketball team he plays on that I coach. Opponent quality matters a great, great deal. And it's one of the most overlooked things. People are very results-oriented. They're not very process-oriented. And we always talk about process over the actual result. You have to account for opponent quality. So that may end up being, and maybe not, but it may end up being one of the worst defenses, if not the worst defense in the NFL, that the Bucs went up against on Sunday. So just because they went out and did what they did, and it was great, does not mean everything's awesome. Or that everything's going to be awesome. And, you have to point those things out. Because I've seen so many, it's not the same with youth sports, obviously, but I've seen so many times where my son's travel baseball team, they'll just get thumped by a team of, like, competent players, and then these travel tournaments, they'd make them into different brackets. So you end up in the bronze bracket or the silver bracket instead of the gold bracket. Then they go on a run and they win the bronze bracket. And they get the championship ring for their travel tournament. And everyone's like, yeah, all right, we won. Yeah, okay, yeah, I know. It's because then we started playing teams that were more on our level or below it. But when we played the actual good teams, we got thumped. And I never say this to the kids. I just let them enjoy their rings because they don't know the difference and they don't care either way. But yeah, the quality of opponent makes a huge difference. And you might think you're all that in a bag of chips one day, and then you play somebody who's actually where you want to be, like an actual Super Bowl caliber team or playoff caliber team, and then you're like, oh, okay, maybe we're not actually that good. And I'm not saying the Bucks are or aren't any of those things. I'm just saying, I don't want to use a foul language or anything, but the line from Pulp Fiction, let's not start bleeping each other's bleeps just yet, gentlemen. Like, let's just everybody back it off a little bit here. Good win. It's going to be a lot more challenging on Sunday in Detroit. One, because of the opponent. Two, because of the injury situation, as the Bucks, in getting their win against the Commanders, did get dinged up, especially in the secondary. So Jordan Whitehead's out. Hall's out. Zion McCollum has got a concussion that he's going through protocol, but looks like he should be. As I'm recording this, it's Thursday afternoon, and so it's not official yet. Same with Gedeky, they're going through protocol. McCollum looks like he should be able to go, but they're secondary right now. They don't have Winfield at safety. It's going to be Jamel Dean at corner, McCollum at the other one, if he can go. If he can't go, Funderburk, who made the team out of camp, Tyreek Funderburk, but who is very green, will be the other corner. The nickelback is Tyke Smith for this weekend. Then at safety, Whitehead, who we trust, and then it would be Christian Eisen at the other safety, who actually he's a natural safety, and Winfield's Winfield, I'm not trying to say that, but it's not actually that bad if they can get through this game without anybody else getting hurt, and then they're rolling with those guys, assuming McCollum can go. It's not to the level where I would say I don't think they can win this weekend because of injuries. I'm not there yet. Definitely doesn't hurt, or doesn't help, though. It also doesn't help that they're going up against Jared Goff, which, for whatever reason, has had a lot of success against Todd Bowles' defenses with the Bucs since Bowles took over the defense with the Bucs. So going back to 2019 under Arians and through now as head coach, but either way, he's been in charge of the defense. They've faced the Lions four times, and Jared Goff has averaged 383 yards in those four games. That's the most of any quarterback who's got at least three starts against the Todd Bowles defenses in that time frame. So he's had a lot of success against the Buccaneers, and it'll be something else to keep an eye on. And, you know, again, I don't think we're at the level where, oh, I don't know how we're going to stop him or anything like that. It's not like that. Just a little more dinged up than you'd like to be after week one. And, you know, hopefully it's just a minor, especially Winfield. It's a ankle thing, and I know seems like he's had at least a little thing here and there every year. Hopefully this is it, and he gets it out of the way, and that's that. He's listed as 2 to 4 weeks right now, but two is on the more optimistic end, more like probably at least the next three games he would be out. And then we'll see after that. But in the meantime, it's 1 o'clock kickoff Sunday. The Bucs at the Lions, the same place they lost in the divisional playoff this past season, although that was a game that was tied going into the fourth quarter before the Lions reeled off 183 yards of offense in the fourth quarter. I know defensive coordinator Larry Foote said that his guys may hear a little bit this week about how that went in the fourth quarter and how they wore down. And hopefully they'll be able to prevent that from happening again. Hopefully the offense can keep it going. I mean, we're all looking for the Bucs to win all the time. But when I'm watching as a fan this weekend, I'm going to continue to want to see what this offense can do and what Liam Cohen can do, because I really like what I saw from them schematically. And I think a lot of people, I'm not going to ever try to be one of those X's and O's guys that uses jargon and things like that. There's plenty of that on Twitter if you want to go looking for it. But it really did seem like Cohen was putting the weapons we have and the assets we have in the best positions to do damage and to succeed. And so I hope that's a theme that continues, because I tell you this all the time, folks. All right. Good teams, good offenses, they aggressively and consistently push the ball down the field and pursue points. They don't try to say ball control. They don't try to say, oh, we need to run the football. I mean, I'm not against running the football, but they don't make that like, oh, their whole thing. Oh, we're going to run the foot. No, they aggressively pursue points at all times and move the ball down the field in the pursuit of points aggressively. And the Bucs did that. I really like what they did downfield and down the sidelines. And then they complement that with a good run. Of course you want a good running game. I'm not saying a running game doesn't matter. And the Bucs, I think, have a lot of room to get better there despite the effort on Sunday. But that's what I'm going to be looking for in this game coming up. As far as like we're looking around the league and some of the observations I had, first of all, the new kickoff, now that we saw it in real live action, not just preseason. And there was one kickoff actual return in the Bills-Cardinals. The Cardinals, they were down by 13. They cut it to 6 in the final minutes on a kickoff return. Couldn't get any closer than that. But anyway, the point is, it was roughly 2/3 of the kickoffs this past week, and it's a small sample size still. We need more than 1 week, but 2/3 that resulted in touchbacks, which is still way too many. It's under what it was, which was like 83%. So it's basically gone from 4/5 to 2/3 in what we have so far. And in my opinion, if you really want to do something productive, you should get the touchback rate not just under two-thirds, not even just under 50%. It should be under one-third. Like, it should be almost, like, kickoff touchback should be pretty rare. And so I don't have a problem with the way the guys are lined up. I know it's weird looking, and I don't like it as much as I like a regular kickoff, but I understand, you know, why they're doing it for player safety. I can live with all that stuff. Just move the kicker back. Like, the kickers are still kicking from the 35, which means they can still kick the ball. The modern-day kickers now, this isn't the 80s where it was some soccer player from a foreign country that was 5'8" with a pot belly and was balding. That's what the average kicker was back then. These are like primo athletes now. They're as good as they've ever been. Kickers from the 35-yard line can almost kick it through the uprights at will. They can definitely reach the back of the end zone. So there's no reason to have the kick coming from there. If you're going to do this whole thing to try and make kickoff returns safer, but you're not going to move the kicker back, it really doesn't matter all the other rule changes you've made. He's still kicking it to the back of the end zone. You're still going to have touchbacks. When the kicker just goes all out and just absolutely lays into the ball, it should land roughly around the goal line. Like a really good kicker, maybe it goes a few yards deep, and a not-so-strong one, maybe it's a little shallow, and an average kick, it gets caught right at the goal line. Then you won't have two-thirds touchbacks. Then you'll have actual returns, which is what people want to see. But, you know, you have to move them back to the 30, or to the 30, maybe even the 25. But they certainly should move the kicker back to the 30. Because it's pointless to go through all these gymnastics to try and fix kickoffs, but the guy's still kicking from a spot where he can reach the back stripe pretty easily, which I think 32 out of 32 kickoff guys can do that from where they kick. So I had a problem with that. It's not a huge problem. There were a few more returns, but there should never be. It's just so pointless. The guy kicks the ball. The ball lands. The two front lines run into each other for like 3 seconds, and they start, you know, hand fighting or whatever. Let's touch back. Like, what a pointless exercise. Less pointless maybe than before, but still pretty pointless. So fix that, please. Although, again, the Sky Rift thing we talked about earlier in the show, I want to stress how great that was. And then looking around the division, first of all, and again, snap judgments are just that, snap judgments. We learn a little bit every week. We get a new data point every week, but we can't jump to conclusions. Whatever you thought about the Bucs' chances in the division on pre-Sunday, this past Sunday, you shouldn't think that much differently. It was good to see Atlanta lose. Hopefully they're not as good as we think. And Kirk Cousins didn't look great. Not that I was scared of Kirk Cousins before Sunday. I'm certainly not now. The Saints obviously look good against the Panthers, but again, that goes back to the opponent quality thing. The Panthers, this is nothing against Dave Canales. I mean, I don't blame him. He got his shot and he took it. It seemed, of all the different people that are trying to get head coaching gigs and how precious those jobs are, and for Dave Canales to go from where he was at Seattle just a couple years ago to being one of the 32, like there's 32 of those and that's it. And there's a whole lot more than 32 people trying to be one of those. It seemed fast. It seemed fast. And if I was, I'm not behind the scenes. Maybe he's one of the 32 because he's one of the few people that was willing to go work for Tepper, that nut job owner they have at Carolina. And if so, I get it. But again, if you're somebody who wants something and there's fierce competition and you're maybe not the favorite in that competition, this is anything. I'm not just talking about Canales. And you get a chance one way or the other, don't you take it, even if the reason you're taking it is because some other people thought the better of it? It's okay. Well, I just want to get in there and get it. He may get fired. He may never be a head coach again, but then he's now a former head coach. Now he's got more cachet for coordinator. Whatever. Just always move forward. I get it from Canales' standpoint. You want to be careerist? Go ahead. From Carolina's standpoint, it's where I didn't get it. And again, that's a bad team. I'm not saying, you know, Vince Lombardi wouldn't have gotten beat 45-10 or whatever the score was by the Saints this past weekend. I'm not saying it was Canales' fault. I'm just saying it looks like that's going to be a rough go of it this year. And maybe they know that. And maybe they're, you know, the way their owner acts, though, he doesn't seem like he always understands that. But anyway, it was good to see them not looking great. That's one less team to worry about. The Falcons and Saints and Bucks don't seem all that different to me. After 1 week, hey, we got a one-game lead on the Falcons, tied with the Saints, fine. Bucks could lose to the Lions Sunday, Falcons win. It's, you know how it is. So don't get too wrapped up in any 1 week. Don't get wrapped up and don't be reactionary to any one result. Just take it. It's a large sample size that you only get 1 week at a time. It's like a drip, drip, drip type thing. But certainly, if nothing else, I feel like the Bucks are not overmatched in the NFC South, and they have as good a chance of anybody to win it. Email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. BobbyGameDay, BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. You can still get a fridge schedule if you want a fridge schedule. I can email it to you. I had a couple requests come in even after the season started. I posted on Twitter. You saw me write the score up there on the side of my fridge, 37-20. It looks great up there. So if you want the one with the color logos and everything, I do every year. I type it up. I can send you the Word file. You print it up. Color print recommended. Let me know. Again, BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. Or if you just want to make a comment, email me about anything. I can maybe read it on the show. Rob emailed me asking about a schedule. Also said, hey, you were right about football season being back. It's awesome, but Tuesdays and Wednesdays are still brutal, he writes. Amen. And it's actually worse when you do have football on the days you don't, because you're just trying to get through those 2 days. Like, every day was like that just a couple weeks ago. But now that we have football back, you're covered Thursday night. Friday, there's some college games, although I went to the Plant game both the past 2 weekends, or Friday nights. I always say go to your local high school game. You've got football on Friday nights one way or the other. And, of course, Saturday, Sunday are covered with college and pro, then Monday night's Monday Night Football. So Tuesday and Wednesday are the two nights where you have to be able to endure. And, I mean, man, last night I was thinking, my God, it's only Wednesday. Can we get to just put something on? If the NFL ever tries to do it, and I know they've said, there's some people that have said they want to do it, it's nothing official. I don't know if I want too much of a good thing. I think maybe you need nights like Tuesday and Wednesday night during football season to make the rest of the day so special. But, you know, I got home, I got, you know, workout done, get the kids dinner, sports practices, all the things that come with raising kids. Finally, everybody's ready for bed. I'm ready to sit in front of my TV for a little while before going to bed myself. And it's like, oh, let me watch the Rays score one run a game again, umpteenth night in a row. Watch them get swept in Philly. Nope, not don't want to do that. Let me watch what else? That was it. There was nothing. there is nothing else. And I'm like, man, I need some sports. But you know, there's other things. Nothing like football though. So we made it to Thursday, and again, by the time you listen to this, it may be Friday or Saturday. I'm recording on Thursday, so we got Bills Dolphins tonight. Don't even care. It could be anybody. I'm just happy. Bills Dolphins, great. I'm in. I am down. Like, my Thursday night is set. I'm going to have some fun watching that. My son will watch some of it with me, and my daughter, too. She's getting into football now. Just give it all back to me. But, Rob, you're absolutely right. Thanks for the email. Again, that's BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com if you want to email. And on Twitter, follow me on Twitter, BobbyGameDay. Same thing, @BobbyGameDay. It's all there. And in the meantime, we are done for the day. Sunday, 1 o'clock, Bucks at Lions, first road game of the year, first real test of the year, too. I guess the team that's had the Bucks number of late, and it's just because they're good in general. We'll see if the Bucks can match up with them, despite the injuries. Enjoy it. Either way, we'll be back next week, hopefully talking about a 2-0 football team. We'll see, though. And no matter what, thank you for listening. Thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform to put me in front of you guys. I'll be back next week with a show. Until then, have a great weekend. Have some people come over for the game. Watch it with some buddies or family or friends or whatever. And wherever you are and whatever you do, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.